Following Jeremy Hunt's spring budget, Kate Perry and Ashley Smokler discuss the key headlines. They cover the changes to national insurance, capital gains tax, furnished holiday lettings, and child benefits.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Accountancy on Prescription. Today I'm joined by Ashley Smokler, one of our tax managers. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Kate. Hi.
Good to have you with us. I think it's your first podcast. So today, Ashley and I are going to be talking about the budget yesterday that Jeremy Hunt gave us. So unfortunately, nothing too exciting. And of course, a couple of things were leaked before the budget anyway. So a few things we were expecting. He did, as they say, pull one rabbit out of the hat that nobody was expecting. And we'll mention that as we go through. So as far as I'm concerned, nothing was particularly special. It was, of course, we think, probably the last budget before the general election. I've heard murmurings that they could choose to hold it in May, but I think the most likelihood is that it will be in September. What did you think, Ashley? Anything of any note particularly?
No, nothing major, just some small percentage changes, and we'll talk about all those as we come along.
The other thing is, of course, that it was good that it was a fairly stable budget and the markets haven't really moved a great deal. So at least we haven't got any movement there. So anyone who's got private pensions or ISAs in stocks and shares will be comfortable with that. So we'll get on and let you know some of the major changes. We'll try and concentrate on those that will be relevant to those listening, obviously mostly in the medical field. But I think the most significant change, Ashley, was the change in the national insurance contributions.
Yep, absolutely. So there was already a change a couple of months ago for employee class one national insurance, which had gone down from 12% to 10%. And what he's done now is he's reduced it even further from 10% to 8%. So that's a one-third reduction. It's going to save an individual £750-odd a year, which is working out at £63 a month, which is pretty impressive.
Yes, that's right. And as you say, that's quite a big jump in the space of sort of 3 months. So that is going to impact on a lot of consultants and salaried GPs. And of course, I think there is a change for the Class 4 national insurance for the self-employed.
Yep, so self-employed individuals and partners in practices. So the previous suggestion that was put forward last year was that the rate would go down from 9% to 8% with effect from 6th of April 24. It's actually now gone down to 6%. So it's actually a 3% reduction. So anyone with profits over 50,500, the saving for them will come in at about £1,150-odd. So everybody's winning at the moment with national insurance.
So that's excellent. Having said that, however, where they chose not to make any changes was, of course, in the various thresholds. So effectively, this is what people may have heard people talk about, what we call fiscal drag. So the thresholds haven't been, I think they were set a couple of years ago and they are set into the future. And to be honest, I think it was hoped they might be increased, but there wasn't a massive expectation that they would be. There isn't a lot of movement for the government to make. So this is an area where I think they think that it might not be noticed. Of course, it will be noticed because inflation has gone up so significantly recently. The fact that the thresholds haven't increased will have an impact on everyone. So although everyone's going to make these national insurance savings, of course, they're going to feel like they've got less money to spend in their pocket because of the thresholds. So do you want to go through the thresholds as they are now? Because we did, of course, have changes starting in April 23. So for the 23-24 changes, we've got an income tax change, which is carrying through into next year as well.
Well, yeah. So basically what has effectively happened is, although the basic rate band remains the same as do the personal allowances, the point at which you begin to pay 45% tax was brought down from £150,000 to £125,140, which is the point in the past where you would have lost your personal allowances, which is still the case. But now you're actually, rather than paying 40% up to £150,000, that now kicks in at the same £125,140. So that's going to cost everybody a little bit more tax. Not massively. Somebody earning a total of £200,000 is only going to see an increase of £1,250 in tax in 23-4 compared to 22-3. So that's where we are as far as the increase in, well, it wasn't even an increase. It was a decrease to the level at which you started to pay 45% tax.
And of course, you mentioned that 100,000 threshold for starting to lose your personal allowance. So that's always been quite a significant sort of cutoff point for people, because we know that once they start going over the 100,000, the effective rate of tax, if you take account of the loss of the personal allowance, is more like 60%.
That's right.
So not only have you got that 60% going up to 125,140, you've then got the next step, so you get the extra tax. So anyone earning over 100,000 is not going to want to go over that. And of course, I'll take the opportunity to mention it now that 100,000 is also the threshold limit for the new childcare, free childcare. So I have had a lot of hospital consultants coming to me saying they are just tipping over the edge and what can they do? So what we need to remember just briefly is to claw your way back to below £100,000 threshold. Pension contributions, and remember it's after pension contributions that you need to look at. So it needs to be after pension contributions and then you look at the 100,000. But one of the other things that you can do, if you're literally a few, say up to £1,000 over, you can do a late gift aid contribution in the following tax year that can be clawed back and utilised against this year. So it's not completely the end of the world. But basically, once you've gone over 100, you sort of want to make sure that you're way over 100 and then you don't have to think about all these other problems because you're so far over, there's nothing you can do. But it is an awkward one, I think. So that was the National Insurance contribution. So that, I think, was the main point that came out of the budget. Other points then, there was a change to, and this I think was a bit of a surprise to most people, and a lot of people would say that this related to the more wealthy people, and that was the change in the higher capital gains tax rates. What did you think of that?
Yeah, so what's happening at the moment has been that where you sell a residential property that was not your own private residence, capital gains tax was basically calculated using two rates. So the lower rate, which hasn't changed, is 18%. The higher rate, which was 28%, is now being reduced to 24%. So you're able to utilize, if you have basic rate available through your other income sources, if you don't go into higher rates, then you can utilize what's left of your basic rate and only pay 18% on that capital gain. And you'll be paying 24% with effect from the 6th of April 24, rather than 28% if you sell before that date.
Right. So there's almost a point in delaying any potential sales so that you get that benefit. But before we suggest that, there's another adjustment, of course, on the annual allowance.
Well, absolutely. So everybody is entitled to an annual allowance for capital gains. For the current tax year, it's £6,000 is the annual exemption. It's going down to £3,000. So he's taking with one hand and giving with another.
Yes, it's a bit of a bizarre situation. And of course, we started, so the 22-23 tax year, we had £12,300 allowance.
Correct.
And it had sat at that level for quite a few years, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as you say, you know, giving with one hand and taking away from the other. That's not to forget, of course, for those who've got properties that they're selling. So this is mainly on if you've got buy-to-let property or a second home. So if you have got business property, remember, there is still the potential for the business asset relief, which would bring these percentages down to a potential 10%. Yeah. So they haven't changed that situation at the moment. So one of the things, and I think this was one of the sort of so-called rabbits out of the hat, was the child benefit. So this may indeed affect some salaried GPs or hospital consultants who perhaps are not working full time. So this is the child benefit for each child that you start to lose, or at least started to lose before, if your income was at £50,000. So what were the changes there, Ashley?
So yeah, so where you have one spouse or marital partner in, whichever way you want to call it, where one of the spouses has income of £50,000 or more and receives child benefit, you start to have to pay back the child benefit at a percentage. So you're paying back 1% based on every £100 that you exceed the £50,000 by, until you reach £60,000, at which point you're basically paying the whole amount back. So those amounts have changed for the year that's about to start in April. You now don't start paying back any child benefit until you have earned in excess of £60,000. And your percentages are only based on every £200 of difference that you go over the £50,000. So you go up now to £80,000. So you'll be paying back some of the child benefit anywhere between £60,000 and £80,000. Once you reach 80, you're paying the whole amount back.
Yes. Yeah, so that may benefit some of you out there. The other thing just to be aware of is that they are also going to be consulting on whether there should be further changes. They are looking at a full household review, because we still have this disadvantage, of course, where you've got two lowish owning partners being able to get the benefit. Whereas if you've got one higher earning partner who's over what would now be £80,000, they lose it all, even if their partner is earning next to nothing or nothing at all, or a much lower amount. So because that has been picked up as an unfair situation, they are going to look at that. Unfortunately, they haven't managed to, because I think that is going to take some change in legislation, and it will be very difficult for them to look at household income. So we'll have to wait and see what they come up with to try and assess that. But hopefully they will try and make it a bit fairer. And I think this change is really just an interim measure while they look at the other position. So for those of you out there who perhaps have second homes, there has now been quite a significant change in furnished holiday lettings. So this is really because we've got the shortage of rental properties now. This change has really been put in, I think, to persuade second home owners, particularly on the coast or in holiday areas, to try and let their properties on a more long-term basis rather than as holiday lets. So Ashley, do you want to talk us through the changes there?
So yes, so first thing to mention is that the abolition of the furnished holiday lettings regime, it comes into force on the 6th of April 25, so it's not actually going to affect anyone immediately. But furnished holiday lettings are different to a standard rental income. Rental income, you can only claim certain expenses. Furnished holiday lettings, you can claim additional expenses, because it's more treated as a sole trade or even a partnership, where a husband and wife may very well have a property that is let out as a furnished holiday let. With it being a partnership in effectively a sole trade, you would be able to apportion the profits that are declared on people's tax returns in whatever proportion you wish, as opposed to rental income, which is generally a 50-50 split. But that's all going to be removed with effect from the 6th of April 25.
Okay, so other things that we probably ought to mention, but just in brief, corporation tax rates for anyone who's got a limited company, they haven't changed going forward. So we've got just to remind you, the 19% for profits up to 50,000 and then going up to 25% over that. And there is a marginal rate, which is about 26%. Just as a reminder, there was a change that was brought in regarding associated companies. So anyone out there who has association with more than one company needs to be aware that these rates, the £50,000, will be split between any company that they have an element of control over, so that each company would only get 20, let's say if you had two companies, 25,000 at 19%. And then over that, they would then go into the marginal rate. So that is something that needs to be borne in mind if you've got your own company for your business and maybe you're a director and shareholder in your partner's business. So both of you may have situations where you'll need to reduce profits. So that is something that needs to be kept in mind.
I think whilst talking about limited companies, that the dividend allowance was reducing again for the current year. So where in the past you've been able to receive larger amounts, so starting at 10,000, going down to 5,000, et cetera, et cetera. At the moment, for the current tax year, you're entitled to receive £1,000 of a dividend from your limited company without there being a tax charge. That's going down to £500 with effect from the 6th of April. And I would suspect that he's going to basically do away with that entirely in the not too distant future. It basically means that the benefits of a limited company are reducing all the time. You're effectively paying almost the same amount of tax as a limited company as you would as a sole trader. So you're kind of getting to the point where unless you can leave money in your company without touching it, it's less beneficial to have a limited company now.
I think that's very true, Ashley. I think it's probably easier now just to remain self-employed, particularly if you do need to take all the money out of the company. There is really very little benefit. I think the only one benefit that there still is within a limited company, of course, is getting the company to buy an electric car, brand new electric car. So that benefit is quite beneficial. But of course, that does involve some extra paperwork because it is a benefit to a director. So yeah, we'd probably say that setting up limited companies now is of no benefit if you're looking purely at the tax side of things and you need to take the money. So other things to mention, the VAT rate. So this is something that sometimes our GPs do need to look at, and also anyone doing procedures that aren't classed as for the benefit of the health of the patient. So some cosmetic surgery type things, Botox injections, those sort of things. Those are actually VAT-able items. And the VAT registration threshold that has actually been set at 85,000. Gosh, I can't remember, Ashley, how long that's been set for.
It's been there for quite a few years, doesn't it? Yeah.
They have increased it, not a lot, but a little bit of increase. They've now increased that 85,000 to 90,000. So that may be relevant for some of you out there. The other matter that, of course, was picked up particularly because of the Prime Minister's wife's position is the change in the rules for non-domiciled individuals. Perhaps you'd like to go through that for us, Ashley.
Yeah. So basically, the proposal is that individuals coming to the UK and becoming UK resident won't pay tax on their foreign income for the first 4 years of residency. After that, they'll be taxable on their worldwide income, and it brings the assets into a UK charge earlier than was possible under current regimes. There's going to be a two-year transitional period for those already resident to encourage those individuals to bring their wealth into the UK for investment purposes. I'm not sure how many non-domiciled individuals we deal with.
Well, I think it's not always clear who is in that position, but I do know that we have a few clients who may consider their domicile. Often domicile is based on your father, where your father lived.
Yeah.
So there are still sort of first generation people living in this country. So, but normally I think the old rules were that if you were here over 20 years, it was assumed that your domicile was then in the UK. So it is something to consider about what needs to be assessed. So just some final other points. We've got a new ISA savings account. So previously had the 20,000 limit for setting up an individual, so an ISA, an individual savings allowance. And they're introducing, well, they're consulting on this, I think, Ashley, aren't they? I don't know if they've actually brought it in quite yet, but it's to add another £5,000 to the original 20.
Yeah, and it's a completely separate ISA. It's called a British ISA, so no idea how different that's going to be to a normal ISA, but it's supposed to be completely separate, but it will be in addition.
That's why it's called the British ISA, isn't it? Because you can only invest in UK equities. So a normal stocks and shares ISA can invest in stocks and shares worldwide. So this is obviously to encourage investment in UK businesses. So we'll have to wait and see how that actually comes out. But we do always recommend clients, if you have any spare cash, to set up either a cash ISA or a stocks and shares ISA. If you're a high tax earner, it's quite useful to be able to build interest, which doesn't get taxed. So everyone, I would always recommend everyone to have some sort of ISA. And anyone with older children wanting to save for a home, they ought to be looking at what we call the LISA, which is the lifetime ISA. You may want to look at that because the government will make a contribution if you make savings into a lifetime ISA. The final comment, I suppose, is to look at the usual things that we all look at. So fuel and alcohol, of course, these, as everyone probably is aware anyway, have been completely frozen. I think the one thing, since we're talking about that area, is any of you who vape, I think they're going to increase the tax on that. But otherwise, I think there's no changes. So I think those are probably the most important areas that we've covered. So to be fair, compared to the budget last spring, there haven't been any significant changes. So most of the thresholds haven't changed. So all the personal thresholds. It's really been really quite an uninteresting budget, I would say, Ashley, would you not?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the main things that everybody's going to see all the time is going to be the national insurance reduction. Yeah. Those with children are going to benefit from the child benefit reduction or increase in thresholds. But basically, there's not an awful lot unless you happen to be selling a property when you get the capital gains increase. So, yeah, it wasn't a very interesting budget.
For those out there who've got pensions, just to mention, nothing changed on the pension. So we still have the removal of the lifetime allowance. But do remember that the pension tax-free amount that you can take is limited to 25% of the original figure, so the 1,074,000. You can only take 25% of that tax-free, but no changes there. I think that was significant in last year's budget, so that's still fairly good news. And we've lost the disconnect between the changes in rate as well. So I think we've hopefully gone away from pensions being an issue for a lot of our clients. But I think that's probably it for today. We'll have to wait and see whether we get any other mini budget before an election and any other further changes. But they haven't got a lot of room to make any further changes, I would suspect. So for now, we'll say goodbye.
Take care, everyone.
And if you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Bye.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.